News in the Apple eBook price-fixing case this week was made outside Judge Denise Coates' courthouse. On Tuesday, plaintiffs from several states, as well as the consumer class, announced a proposed settlement with the Cupertino, California computer maker. Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. This latest move, however, is hardly the last in the long-running litigation. Our own legal, Andrew Albanese, watches the story closely as senior writer at Publishers Weekly, and he joins me now as he does every Friday. Welcome back, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
So we'll get to Apple in just a minute, but we'll tell people that for PW, the fall season, it's just summer now, but for you folks at PW, the season for autumn is upon us, and in Monday's issue, you'll have the scoop there.
That's right. So this Monday's issue is our annual fall announcements, in which we will run down all of the offerings from hundreds of publishers across 20 categories, complete with short essays and top 10 lists. And it's one of our biggest issues every year. It's jam-packed with great forthcoming books, and it is a great way to get a look at what will be a great fall reading season. So do check out Monday's issue for what you can look forward to this fall.
Right, indeed. And so in that bag for the beach, you can have all your summer reading and some hints and tips for fall as well. Now, readers may be able to have some cash to buy some of those books, because the big news this week, and something you've been talking with us about on the show for many weeks now, is that there will not be a damages trial after all in the Apple ebook price fixing case, as the parties have announced a settlement. Tell us all about it.
That's right. So this week, Apple appears finally, it's finally going to avoid what was sure to be a pretty major damage award against them by agreeing to settle monetary claims with the states and the consumer class arising from its ebook price fixing case. But because the settlement agreement remains sealed for now, there's a lot of questions out there. The biggest of which, of course, is how much? And the other big question is simply how? As for how much, we can look at it this way. By settling, Apple likely reduces its potential payout by at least a third. After all, the settlement number can't be trebled like a damage award can. So that $840 million high number for damages that we've been throwing around after trebling, that's now off the table. But the question is, how close to the estimated $280 million in actual damages, as calculated by the plaintiffs, will this deal get? Now, my guess is that it must get pretty close, because otherwise, why would the plaintiffs settle? The plaintiffs were just weeks away from a trial, and as I've been saying for weeks now, probably even closer to a summary judgment ruling that would have given them exactly what they were asking for. I think clearly Apple saw that a ruling was coming, and it could have come at any moment, and they saw that as their drop-dead date, and so this is why they decided to pull the trigger on a settlement now, and probably with good reason. You know, we can look at it this way. For the few things that we know from Judge Coates' earlier decision so far is that, one, she is determined to see Apple pay damages. Two, she found that the plaintiff's damage calculation model was reasonable. And three, she found that Apple's arguments against that damage calculations were so weak that she disqualified them, leaving Apple with virtually no defense. So that's basically why I've been saying for the last few months that there was a really good chance, a growing chance, that there wasn't going to be a damages trial, because either Judge Coates was going to hand out a number in summary judgment, or there was going to be a settlement, because with no defense, there was really not much for Apple to go to trial with. Now, we should also say that there remains a major caveat here. According to a letter filed with the court, any final payout from Apple is contingent on the outcome of its appeal with the Second Circuit. So if the appeals court somehow manages to overturn the July 2013 ruling on liability, then there may be no payout or reduced payout.
All right. So it seems pretty clear why Apple would move in this direction. They reduce their exposure, as you say, and they still have a shot of getting out without a payout if that appeal does succeed. But given their obviously strong position, why do you think the plaintiffs would settle?
I think this is a really interesting question, and I think the only real answer, obviously, is because of time. You know, as they say, time is money. You know, for the plaintiffs, even if they'd won a large award, the appeal process was going to drag on. With this settlement now, we could actually see money paid out much more quickly without the cost of further litigation. You know, it's the basic answer, I think, to why anyone ever settles, right? You know, you do it to have an expeditious ending to something. And consider too that plaintiff lawyers the plaintiff's lawyers, Higgins Berman, have already filed another class action suit. They've already moved on to the next case. This one against Google, another deep-pocketed giant, over its search business. So clearly, I think the attorneys in this case are also ready to cash a check and to move on to the next fight. Now, again, I think it must be stressed that we don't know what the final settlement agreement says here yet. We don't know what payment contingencies are in there, whether they include legal fees or the $9 million in fines Apple is also on the hook for. We also don't know whether Apple must pay following a loss at the Second Circuit or if they can continue to drag out this process through the resolution of an appeal as far as it can go, through an en banc hearing at the Second Circuit or even on the way up to the Supreme Court, perhaps. But here's what I think we can safely say. The plaintiffs think their case is certain to be upheld on appeal, or else they wouldn't have entered into this deal. And Apple, for all of its claims of innocence, probably isn't all that confident in its appeal position either. Now, some media reports have suggested that Apple's deal lets Apple focus on its appeal. But that appeal is already largely briefed, and you really only get one short oral argument, and you don't get to present new evidence. So that the idea that Apple, with this team, the best lawyers out there and a massive war chest, is focusing on its appeal is wrong, because they've already focused their energy on the appeal. What this settlement tells me is that Apple has always known how this is likely to end. And they've now likely decided that they've done enough to make their public case for innocence, and it's really sort of time to just move on. And you can consider this too. Timing is everything. And with its main competitor, Amazon, sucking up all the bad headlines for its negotiating tactics against publishers, something that's likely to continue for some time, there really is no better time to put this mess behind them from a PR standpoint. Because even if Apple somehow manages to look like a price fixer to some, they still look like heroes because they were fighting the devil Amazon out there. So in terms of timing, this really couldn't have gone any better for Apple.
Well, you know, Andrew, the twists and turns in this story, and you've been identifying them all for us over the last year and more, really are fascinating. So the question, of course, is what's next?
And now we wait to see what the unsealed terms are, which we should see before a July 16th conference, but there's no guarantee on that. But because it is a settlement involving the public, after the deal is preliminarily approved by Judge Coate, there's also likely going to be a mandated public comment period and also probably a fairness hearing, just as there was in the publisher settlements. So I wouldn't expect a refund any day soon. And of course, we have the appeals process that still has to pay out. And while, you know, I think that there's some measure of confidence that the verdict that Judge Coate rendered is going to hold up on appeal, you never know. And certainly, you and I have seen some appeals court pull out some crazy technicalities in the past that have totally upended cases. So who knows? This could be dragging on for some time. For me, however, the $200 million question, as it were, is as I said before, is how. How will this money be distributed? Now, if it's done as credits and is confined to books, this could be a huge, huge boon for publishers, because that's potentially $200 million or so of Apple money that's going to flow through consumers right through to publishers' bottom lines at some point. And if the Amazon issue continues to drag on and the major publishers, by some twist of fate, are not doing business with Amazon at some point for ebooks, then Apple's money is less likely to flow onward to Amazon. So even better, right?
Yeah, in fact. And, you know, whatever happens with Amazon, Apple's money is going to be a major boost to publishers' bottom lines. And it comes at a time when the ebook market is still in flux, so they would have to welcome that. In fact, in Monday's issue, you have a story about that ebook market flux.
That's right. The ebook market really is in an interesting place right now when you consider Amazon and, of course, the library market, which I'm also involved with. We talked a little bit about the American Library Association meeting coming up in Las Vegas. Well, in Monday's issue, I'll be looking a little more closely at the library ebook market in a piece that's drawn from a 2-hour discussion that I moderated at the Random House Auditorium last week. You know, that's right. I had a 2-hour talk, and it was a breakfast talk. Nevertheless, it was really fascinating. And unlike other panels with, you know, 45 minutes and 4 PowerPoints, this was a discussion that put a panel of publishers, librarians, and service providers on a stage. And then we had a freewheeling talk about the issues with the audience. So it was 2 hours of back and forth. And, you know, there's a lot of interesting positions right now, but I think the consensus that we were able to come to is that, you know, despite progress in securing a very basic level of ebook access for libraries, how the library market is developing makes this future wide open. So there's some really fascinating stuff, a bunch of new models, a bunch of new service providers, and you can read all about that in Monday's issue.
Well, indeed, we will look forward to that, and we appreciate Andrew Albanese joining us as he does every Friday on Beyond the Book. Andrew Albanese, senior writer for Publishers Weekly. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Chris. You too.
Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs, as well as images, movies, and television shows. You can follow Beyond the Book on Twitter, find us on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at our website, beyondthebook.com. Our engineer and co-producer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.